spot. Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
As soon as I started putting it in the hands of America's last World War II veterans, I had no idea the doors it would open, the stories it would tell, and the legacies it would carry on. And putting that rifle into their hands just really acted as a microphone. They remembered all the memories, and I was able to pull out some of stories never heard before.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Andrew Biggio. He's the author of The Rifle 2, Back to the Battlefield, with more stories from the veterans of World War II. We'll talk with Andrew about the book coming up a little bit later on in today's program. First, we're joined by Dr. Paul Ray, professor of history, and Charles O. Lee and Louise K. Lee, chair in Western Heritage at Hillsdale College. His new book is out now, Sparta's Sicilian Proxy War, The Grand Strategy of Classical Sparta, 418 through 413 B.C. Dr. Ray, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
People who go way back with our show know we've talked to you about a couple of previous books in this series. This is the fifth in the series, just released. So quickly set the stage for us, if you could, as we begin. What's the context of this conflict? Where are we? And who are the major players involved?
Okay, well, the title of the book is Sparta's Sicilian Proxy War. Proxy wars take place when you get enduring strategic rivalries. And within my experience as a historian thinking about this, there are two contexts when this happens. One is when you get a war between a land power and a sea power, and neither one can deliver a knockout blow to the other. Mm-hmm. So the thing just goes on, and their episodes of fighting, they get exhausted and so forth. The other one is the nuclear stalemate. So we live in a world of proxy wars. From a Russian perspective, Korea, Vietnam were proxy wars against the United States. They could bleed us cheaply. Mm. All they had to do is provide money and material. We fought a proxy war against the Russians in Afghanistan, providing Stingers and so forth to support the Afghan rebels. And it brought down the Soviet Union, arguably. We got paid back when we went into Afghanistan with the Pakistanis conducting a proxy war against us. And Iran and Syria did the same thing in Iraq. And of course, we're now involved in a proxy war against the Russians in Ukraine. This enduring strategic rivalry between Athens and Sparta begins in about 465, and it lasts all the way down to 404 BC. And the what I call Sparta's Sicilian proxy war is an incident in that larger struggle. And the struggle has changed character prior to Sparta's involvement in Sicily. The Athenians managed to put together a coalition, and the key figure doing it is Alcibiades, within the Peloponnesus against Sparta. And for the first time, the wars with Athens had become an existential question for the Spartans. That is to say, if they had lost the Battle of Mantinea in 418 against the Argives and the Mantineans and the Athenians, and they might well have because there were more Athenians on the way and there were Eleans on the way. Had they lost that battle, they probably would have lost everything.
Dr. Ray, where does this fit in Sparta's war strategy? Do they have any aims or additional motives beyond just countering their geopolitical rival here?
They've been very reluctant in their war with the Athenians up to this time, because the Athenians stand between them and Persia. This is not a bipolar world. It's a tripolar world. And the Persians are off stage, but they're a great threat. And the power that keeps them off stage is Athens with its navy. So there are many at Sparta who do not want to destroy Athens and its navy. On the other hand, they don't want Athens and its empire to impinge on their domain within the Peloponnesus.
Mm-hmm.
So after 418, they suddenly realize they have to really get serious about this, and the Athenians hand them a great favor. They wade into a war to conquer all of Sicily. Now, Athens is about 2,000 square miles. Sicily is 10,000 square miles. The largest city in Sicily is Syracuse, and that's where the Athenians start. And Syracuse is as wealthy as Athens, arguably. It has a population that is close to that of Athens, especially after the Athenians had been reduced by the plague. So it's a major undertaking, and it's 800 nautical miles away from Athens, which in antiquity is a very great distance.
Mm-hmm.
Overseas that can be very, very rough in the winter. And what happens is there are quarrels at Athens, and the mind behind the Sicilian expedition, a man named Alcibiades, is driven into exile. He persuades the Spartans to intervene. And their intervention consists of sending one man, a man named Gylippus, to Syracuse. And he arrives at a time when they're about to surrender, and within a matter of weeks, he turns the thing around. And the Athenians go in the course of that year, which is 415, from the besiegers to the besieged. And they foolishly send a second expedition. They double down on it. Basically, they commit everything they have to it. And thanks to Gylippus and to the steel he has put into the Syracusans, and to some help they get from the Corinthians, which was their mother city, they not only beat the Athenians, they annihilate the Athenian army and destroy the navy that went out.
So at the end, where does that leave us? What are the current situations of these tri-powers?
At the end of the Sicilian expedition, to which Thucydides devotes two books of his history, which is 20% of the history. That's even more. It's a quarter of the history. So those 2 years he spends a lot more time on than on any other period. And it's because Athens is suddenly made vulnerable to Sparta because of this. It doesn't mean the Athenians will lose, but it does tempt the Persians to enter the fray and the Spartans to make an alliance with Persia, which they'd been very loath to do in the past, because they think they have to get rid of the Athenians, and the only way to do it is to use Persian money to produce the fleets and to pay the people who row in the fleets. So it's of profound importance for the outcome of the war, because it opens up the possibility of defeating Athens. And look, the expedition was something crazy. The Athenians didn't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that much to gain. Had they been victorious, they would have had a great deal of trouble holding on to what they had conquered. It's a long ways away. They don't have the manpower to have a garrison that can really hold it. So it's a foolish and arrogant endeavor.
The ancient Spartan regime is renowned for fierce and courageous warriors, but less renowned for their displays of strategy. So how does the book Spartans, Sicilian Proxy War help to perhaps alter the characterization and bring a greater appreciation of the military prowess of the Spartan regime?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, our image of Sparta is Thermopylae, a tremendous bravery fighting to the death. That, in fact, was the way the Greeks saw them, too. But the truth of the matter is the Spartans are cunning and clever. I'll give you two examples. The Battle of Plataea. This is the decisive battle of the Persian Wars. The Athenians, with the Spartan allies, have defeated the Persians at Salamis, but there's a Persian army still in Greece, perfectly capable of conquering it if they had won the Battle of Plataea. And what do the Spartans do? They outwit the Persians.
Dr. Ray, we have to pause for a moment. We'll come back and finish that answer and talk more about the new book.
Celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
The United States Marine Corps is celebrating its 248th birthday, November 10th, at Wind River Event Center. All are invited to come and celebrate this special event that includes March On of Colors, the Jefferson Pipes and Drums, and honoring our oldest and youngest Marines present, and much more. Tickets are $35 and includes dinner and birthday cake and dancing. Tickets can be obtained through Eventbrite, Marine Corps 248th birthday. For more information, call 530-605-4565.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Riverfront Playhouse presents Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, adapted by Jeffrey Hatcher from the novella Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde by Robert Louis Stevenson. Directed by Lawrence Stanfield, a new and shocking twist on the classic tale of depravity, lust, love, and horror. See two sides of a psyche battle each other in a deadly game of cat and mouse to determine who shall be the master and who his slave. Tickets available at riverfrontplayhouse.net and enjoy the store ready. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, October 20th through November 4th, sponsored by Audiology Associates of Reading, this station, and other amazing sponsors.
Mow, dig, haul, lift. The versatile Kubota VX Series subcompact tractor does it all. Switching attachments is simple, and a smooth hydrostatic transmission makes for easy operation. The Kubota VX Series, rated number one in durability and owner experience. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Hi, this is Chelsea with NorCal Tractor and Equipment. You do it all, we do it local.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue, open and free, every other Sunday, right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Dr. Paul Ray, professor of history here at Hillsdale College. His new book, Sparta's Sicilian Proxy War. Dr. Ray, when we left off, we were talking about the Battle of Plataea, the decisive battle of the Persian Wars, and how Sparta's strategy helped win that conflict for the Spartans. Tell us more.
The strength of Persia is mainly in cavalry. The Persians understand that. They have withdrawn to Boeotia, where there's a plain. The Spartans do not fight them in that plain. What they do is they pretend panic. They pretend a kind of dispute within their own ranks. And they withdraw in apparent disorder to high ground on the outskirts of Mount Kithairon, which separates Attica from Boeotia. And they draw the Persians to attacking them on terrain where the Persians cannot deploy their cavalry. So the Persians are left with their artillery, which is to say their archers, and with their infantrymen. Okay, their infantrymen are inferior to those of the Greeks. The equipment that they have is not very good. And the bulk of their infantrymen double as archers. So they'll drop their bows, they'll pick up shields, and they'll pick up spears, and they'll attack. The Greeks have a kind of armor that Persian archers can't penetrate. Now, you get unlucky, they'll hit you in the eye, or they'll hit you in the neck. But basically, the Greeks can hunker down and live through an artillery barrage. And then they can attack. And if the Persians do not have the support of their cavalry, they can slaughter. That's what the Athenians did at Marathon. They outwitted the Persians at Marathon, and they won. The Spartans do the same thing at Plataea. So the notion that the Spartans don't really understand warfare is simply false. And look, Gylippus arrives at Syracuse, sizes up the situation, and within a week, the tide has turned because he sees where the Athenians are vulnerable, and he uses an army of Syracusans, and they outnumber the Athenians, to sort of hold the Athenian army in place, and then he sends another force secretly around behind them to take their principal fort. And this buoys up the spirits of the Syracusans, and then they have to move to prevent the Athenians from building a wall around Syracuse on the land side.
Dr. Ray, what are the potential consequences of that? What can we say about the Syracusans and their way of life?
One, they don't import grain. So besieging them from the sea alone is useless. You've got to do it from both the sea and the land. And the Athenian strategy is a standard strategy is to build a wall around their wall and wall them in and starve them out. And they're most of the way there when he arrives. Now, how do you deal with that? A counter wall. And to sustain the effort in building a counter wall, you've got to defeat them on the ground, hoplite tactics. Well, he trains the Syracusans. He turns them into Spartans in fairly short order. They win that, and then move after move, there will be diversionary tactics, and then he'll strike. Diversionary tactics, and then he'll strike. And every victory over the Athenians that takes place because he gets them to concentrate in the wrong place. In other words, the Athenians, who are proud of their intelligence, get outwitted by the Spartan. And it eventually goes to sea inside the harbor at Syracuse, which is huge. I went down there. It's just immense. So you can actually have a major naval battle in a harbor. Can't maneuver very well, but you can get all the ships in there. The way they win that is by trying to figure out when the Athenians eat. Get their people organized for having lunch. And then you attack. And by the way, this happens two more times later in the war. And the Battle of Aegospotami, that's how Lysander has his final victory over the Athenians. So the Spartans have generals who can think and who can figure out the defects of the other side and outwit them. They're extremely good at this. And in the secondary literature, they're simply underestimated. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really written about this. I thought about writing just an article called Outwitting the Enemy, The Lacedaemonian Secret. This would drive people crazy because it's contrary to all of the prejudices of everyone in the classics profession and right. in the larger world.
Of the defining events in the Peloponnesian War, where does the Sicilian expedition fit? How does it compare to others? And is it perhaps one of the most decisive events of the entire conflict?
It is. I don't think there's any doubt. Look, if you're looking at the first stage in the war, what the Greeks called the Archidamian War, it's a stalemate. And they fight to exhaustion. Then there's a brief moment where things fall apart in the Peloponnesus. Alcibiades takes advantage of it, and you get the Battle of Mantinea. That might have been decisive, but it wasn't. And so you've got a stalemate in the war. How do you break the stalemate? Well, what Sicily does is it deprives the Athenians of manpower and of ships. Ships are expensive to build. They take time to build. Manning them is expensive. So in a certain sense, what the Spartans deprive the Athenians of is their principal advantage, which is money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this that causes the Persians to think, we can finally get rid of these Athenians. And they send people with money to the Spartans saying, we can help. And the Battle of Mantinea has persuaded the Spartans that they really need to make an alliance with Persia, which they have been very loath to do prior to that time. So you get that alliance. And then the allies of the Athenians resent, especially the larger cities, having to pay the tribute. And so it's pretty easy to get them to rebel.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Athenians suddenly find themselves desperate for money. And after the Sicilian expedition, if the Athenians lose a single major battle, it's over. They cannot afford to lose a single battle. The Spartans can lose battle after battle and still come back because the Persians will give them the money to build the ships. And that's essentially what happens.
Dr. Paul Ray, the new book, the fifth in his series, Sparta's Sicilian Proxy War, The Grand Strategy of Classical Sparta, 418 to 413 BC. That book is available now. Dr. Ray, Professor of History, Charles O. Lee and Louise Cayley, Chair in Western Heritage here at Hillsdale College. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's been good to be with you again.
Up next, Andrew Biggio is with us. His new book, The Rifle 2, Back to the Battlefield, Stories from World War II. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Now at Black Bear Diner, enjoy four new buttermilk biscuit creations. So huge, so monumental, you're going to need a fork and knife to enjoy them. Each featuring our enormous, baked, fresh in our kitchen everyday buttermilk biscuits. The baby burn chicken fried steak. The savory tri-tip benedict. The hot honey crispy chicken. The colossal breakfast club. So get to Black Bear Diner today and grab your fork and knife for limited time only.
Black Bear Diner.
The official meeting of the business-to-business meeting is called to order. Business-to-business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
Well, I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
No. Business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and price right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Fall is the best time of the year to plant trees and shrubs. The nights are cooler and the ground is still warm, and this allows the roots to take hold and gives the plants a good start. Starting Thursday, October 12th through the 31st, Gold Leaf Nursery's big fall sale begins. Take advantage of their fall sale prices, and what a sale it's going to be. 40% off all 1 gallon through 24-inch box trees. Take 40% off all 1 gallon through 15-gallon shrubs, vines, and ground cover. The nursery is loaded with beautiful plants, shrubs, trees, perennials, and ground cover. Their roses, crepe myrtles, and verbenas are in bloom. They have a tasty selection of fruit trees and citrus with over 1,000 in stock and on sale. Come in and take advantage of this big fall sale. 40% off all shrubs and trees, 1 gallon or larger. Now in stock. Fall vegetable and fall color. Gold Leaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course and a quarter mile from Airport Road. Don't miss the big fall sale at Gold Leaf Nursery.
Hey, what's going on in Redding, California? This is Tony Horde with Better Homes and Gardens Results Real Estate. Be sure and tune in to KCNR on your radio dial Wednesdays at 5 p.m. for Living in the North State. Together with my three amazing co-hosts, Rich Howe, Bill Woodford, and Mindy Cochran, we'll be interviewing professionals in the industry and taking your calls to answer all your questions and have a great time doing so. Talk to you then, Redding.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Everybody has been dealing with the availability of homeowners insurance in Northern California. Companies not writing your home insurance anymore are leaving the state altogether. Siskiyou Insurance has hired a specialist specifically for dealing with a homeowners crisis here in Shasta County. He specializes in what the market is doing, coverages, and which companies may be able to help. Call Brian Dews at Siskiyou Insurance Services for your home or auto consultation. Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
A veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, president of New England's Wounded Veterans, Inc. He's also the author of a couple of books, including this new one, The Rifle 2, Back to the Battlefield. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We have to talk about the rifle first, I think, especially if people did not read or have not seen the first book in this series. Tell us about the rifle that is on the cover of this book and the rifle that helped inspire so many of the stories inside.
Sure. The rifle, which is now becoming famously known around the world, is a rifle that I possess that has over 320 signatures covering it of all of the different World War II veterans I've met and interviewed. And this particular rifle started off with no signatures. It started off as a basic wooden stock rifle. And as soon as I started putting it in the hands of America's last World War II veterans, I had no idea the doors it would open, the stories it would tell, and the legacies it would carry on. And putting that rifle into their hands just really acted as a microphone. They remembered all the memories of specific battles they were in, training they did. I mean, we're going back 78 years, and it was just such a good bonding technique from veteran to veteran. And I was able to pull out some of stories never heard before.
What is it, do you think, about the service rifle that makes it so uniquely capable of unlocking the memories from these veterans?
You know, it's because you had to survive with that piece of equipment. It was the most important piece of your equipment to have was a Marine and his rifle, a soldier and his weapon. That was what General Patton called the weapon that won the war. And without it, you were useless. The rifle without you, you were useless. You know, everybody, I think, understands that, especially those who have served. I mean, this is the only thing standing between you and tyranny, you and Nazism. And these men ate, slept, and lived with this rifle in foxholes for years.
This project and these books are really about collecting the stories of the World War II generation, those who fought in World War II, honoring that place that they have in American history. Why, for you, is it so important to get these stories, and what will be lost once we are unable to collect any more of these stories?
We are in the single digits left of American World War II veterans. Single-digit years, I mean, you know. I think in 5 years, the youngest World War II veterans will be about 102. And we're going to lose so much firsthand accounts. Now, it's from here on in, it's going to be just reading books that someone else wrote or stories that someone else heard. And I've been able to deliver to America's youth via social media. You know, I have like 80,000 followers on Instagram, so these kids are able to take their phone out of their pocket and see these photos and see these interviews of America's World War II veterans, stuff they're not getting in school. So that's one good thing social media has been doing with raising awareness of America's last World War II veterans. Now you can see on the news and on internet news clippings of a World War II veteran celebrating his 100th birthday. You know, this is stuff that we didn't do for the World War I veterans who disappeared before our eyes.
Talking with Andrew Biggio, his book is The Rifle II, Back to the Battlefield. These stories themselves are, I'll say, better read from the people themselves. And so I don't want to ask you too much to tell other people's stories. That's what the book is for. But there are a few I wanted to dig into in our conversation today. You talked in the book with Jake Reuser, 98 years old, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, saved hundreds of lives with the 4th Infantry Division during World War II. What was it like to talk to someone who was in the business of saving lives during World War II?
Jake is such a humble man. I mean, this guy, his father was in World War I. His father was a Purple Heart recipient. He became a World War II veteran. He became a Purple Heart recipient. And just a humble man. I mean, listening to the stories, particularly about the Battle of the Hurricane Forest with him. I mean, going up and down these hills. I mean, it was the most per capita wounded American soldiers in a battle condensed in the forest there, in the Hurricane Forest. And he had to drag these men up and down these gullies, these ravines, back to safety with artillery exploding all around him. And, you know, I took him back to this location. I took him back to Germany. And the forest is full of trees. And he's like, the last time I was here, there was no trees. They were all exploded. They were burst in half. And now to see that there's an actual forest here is just amazing. And I surprised, you know, the reason why the book's called Back to the Battlefield, because this particular book I brought about 10 veterans back to their foxholes, to the homes they took refuge in. And so I surprised Jake with a plaque that said, dedicated to the medics of the 4th Infantry Division in the Battle of the Hurricane Forest. This plaque was dedicated by Jake Reuser, who returned 78 years later.
And I also wanted to ask about Charles Ketchum. This gun, the rifle, brings back so many memories for so many veterans of World War II as they hold it, as they touch it. Charles Ketchum didn't want to hold it, didn't want to touch it, didn't want to look at it. His chapter is called The Pacifist. What did you make of Charles Ketchum?
It was good to meet someone like Charles because unlike Stolen Valor, you can tell this guy went through something. You know, the fact that he vowed to never pick up a rifle again, he didn't want to hold it. You know, he signed it for me and he took part in my project and let me hear his story, but he didn't want to hold it. And I respected that so much. And to hear his story about fighting in Germany, he's somebody that was a replacement, you know, and we always focus on these battles and the Battle of the Bulge and Normandy, but we really forget how bad the fighting was after our troops crossed the Rhine River and had to do that house-to-house fighting and dealing with a fanatical enemy that didn't want to necessarily always surrender in some of these German towns. And he was someone that had to kill. He had to kill, and I think that stuck with him for life. He never went to any reunions. He never took part in any Veterans Day, Memorial Day stuff. And I'm glad I got to cover a little bit about his story. And I am sad because he did pass away before he saw the finished product.
I've asked you about a few of these veterans I found interesting. Is there anything or anyone in particular that you hold has a special place in your heart or a story that sticks with you to this day?
Boy, a lot of them. But I think Ed, who's particularly Ed Cottrell, who is in book two, he flew 65 missions as a P-47 pilot at age 22 years old. And I took him back to his runway for the first time since World War II. We found his overgrown runway in Belgium. And then we took it a little step further. We went into Germany and located two different crash sites of his roommates, his own. He lost two roommates in the Battle of the Bulge. They were shot down by flak. They were shot down by enemy planes. And to be there with him at the crash sites of his friends. And we contacted the farmers who own the property, and the farmers said, well, hell, for the last 30 years, my tractor has been kicking up pieces of this plane. And we were able to give pieces of this plane to Ed, of his roommate, his wingman, Ted Smith's plane. Ed got to bring home with him back to North Carolina at age 100, and that was just powerful.
Veterans in other nations like Switzerland can take their service rifles home with them when their time in the military is up. Based on what you've witnessed through these interviews, do you think that a similar policy here in the U.S. for soldiers got to keep their service weapons would be beneficial psychologically to American veterans?
Not necessarily. I like the fact that the next young veteran that goes to boot camp or basic training can hold the rifle that another veteran or soldier used before him, and to know that that weapon took care of the soldier before him and that weapon had history. And I think that is probably more psychologically sound than bringing home a weapon, and probably financially better for the government, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I like the fact that I could look down at my rifle and see like initials and little tape markings of the Marine that held it before me.
Andrew Biggio, his book, The Rifle 2, Back to the Battlefield, is available now. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, we talk with Courtney Mayette from Hillsdale's chemistry department. Last time we checked in, she was doing Ironman races, now something else, but equally athletic. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, La Gloria Cubana Classic, a longtime favorite created with Nicaraguan and Dominican fillers and an exquisite Ecuadorian Sumatra wrapper. Along with a medium body profile, this stick offers rich chocolate and leathery notes with a cedary finish, guaranteed to age well. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
It's never too late to start at Shasta College. Late start classes and 8-week compressed classes are still available. To learn more about upskilling or reskilling for a current job or career, information is online at shastacollege.edu or call one of our counselors to see how easy it is to get enrolled at 530-242-7650. Shasta College offers in-person, hybrid, and online class options to fit your busy life and responsibilities. Financial aid is available. More at shastacollege.edu.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Find out if there's a radio station in your area playing this program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and click on our affiliates link. We're joined by Dr. Courtney Mayette. She is chairwoman and associate professor of chemistry here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Mayette, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We last talked about this point a couple of years ago, which seems hard to believe. But you were in the middle of the world of Ironman competitions, which seems tough enough. Did you enjoy those events, and what did you take away from that experience?
I did enjoy the events. It started off as a little small sprint triathlon, and it snowballed into an Olympic distance, then a 70.3, and then finally the 140.6, because everyone has to do an Ironman in their lifetime. And I didn't stop there. I did a second Ironman. But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of training, several hours, you know, upwards of 20 hours a week of training. And it's multidiscipline, you know, the swim, bike, run. Oh, yeah. And it's hard to juggle all of that. Yeah. And I honestly liked biking more than the other, you know, two disciplines. And I found that I was going to these events because I lived to be on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you've transitioned, in fact, over to the world of from Ironman to gravel racing. So
yes.
How did you find out about gravel racing, and what about it appealed to you?
Okay. It's a little bit of a long story, but I was thinking about going strictly into cycling. I'd done some ultra cycling events. So I did the national 24-hour time trial where, you know, you get on a bike and you just put in as many miles as you can within 24 hours. Some people think that's fun, and I thought it would be fun until, you know, about midnight, probably 16, 18 hours in, and it started to hurt really bad, and I didn't, you know, I was
not
questioning
so fun
my
anymore.
Life choices.
Yeah.
No, not fun anymore. But I had my sights set on doing more cycling, and then I found out that I had actually qualified for USAT Nationals, so that's triathlon age group national championships. And I thought, well, that's kind of a neat thing. Maybe I should train for that. And I didn't know how to train for both, so I hired a coach. And through knowing this coach and him knowing what I liked, he suggested I get into gravel cycling. And so that's really where, you know, where I got into gravel.
So what are the details? What's different about gravel cycling than other cycling? What makes it a challenge?
Yeah, so interesting about gravel cycling, you know, a lot of people will say, well, people have been riding on gravel roads since they've had bicycles, you know, because we didn't have pavement back in the early days of the bicycle. And so gravel cycling as a discipline, though, has become, it's probably the most recent cycling discipline, and it's gained a lot of traction in the last few years, especially since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, you know, needing something to do, getting their bodies moving, getting on a bike. And so the United States has really been the center of that surge of gravel cycling, and it's spilling over now internationally, and the UCI, which is the governing body of cycling, has now adopted gravel and is having their own gravel events. but it's definitely U.S. based, and there's a culture. It's special. There's road cycling, there's crit racing, there's cyclocross, there's mountain biking, and now we have gravel. And gravel is just a different kind of scene. Some people would say there's a spirit of gravel, and it's a lot of people that just enjoy getting out and riding their bikes. There's generally a big party scene after, so there's there's good food, there's beer, there's they'll have live bands, and sometimes I think for many people it's more about the after party than the actual cycling event, but it's just a good time to get out and be with others and to enjoy a lot of our natural world. You know, our gravel roads take us off of the main roads, mm-hmm. and get us out into nature. And you see a lot more. It's typically safer than riding on the roads. You don't have to worry so much about, you know, any kind of vehicle traffic. It's rare you'll see a car. It allows you to relax more, I think, and enjoy the sport.
Talking with Dr. Courtney Mayette here at Hillsdale College about gravel cycling. What's your approach, meaning how much of this for you is fun and exercise, and how much of this is being competitive as you would be in, say, like the Ironman competitions?
Yeah, so I'm very competitive. I'd like to say that it's purely for pleasure and enjoyment of the outside world, but I really do like to get out there and see what I can do and push my body and test my limits. And I mean, that it makes sense. I mean, Ironman is kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And I want to see, you know, what I can do with gravel.
Take us through one of those events then. How many people are generally involved? How many end up finishing? And what's it like along the way?
Yeah. So there are so many different types of gravel events. There are really small gravel events where, you know, you'll be lucky to get 100 people total involved, up to some of the large events throughout the United States where these races can draw thousands of people at a time. I would say that, you know, pretty much everyone that starts the race will typically finish. There are, I mean, with the exception of those that have, you know, mechanical issues, there doesn't seem to be that huge DNF, that did not finish
right.
rate in gravel cycling like there is in Ironman. Typically, everyone that gets on their bike finishes as long as their bike can hold out.
That can be a question. My son and I bike a lot, as I mentioned to you off air, and we have had between us, I think, 3 bikes fail in the midst of mm-hmm. cycling. So it's not out of the question that
right.
those things can happen.
Right.
At these races, though, you're not just competing, you're winning. You won first place in the women's 50 mile at the recent 3rd annual Sasquatch Gravel Chase bike race. So how do you get good? How do you work to improve?
I don't know. I think I'm a little of an anomaly. When I did triathlon, you know, it was just, I was middle of the road. I'm just an average person that's trying to get in shape and do a race. You know, swimming, I'm okay. You know, I can get through the water. I'm not super fast. With running, you know, I can shuffle along after swimming and riding my bike, but I'm not a fast runner. But I had a good bike split. So I found that I had, for whatever reason, some strong legs underneath me whenever I got on the bike. And that's the whole reason I ended up qualifying for nationals in triathlon, was it was solely on bike split, you know, had nothing to do with my swim or my run. And so I've taken to it naturally. I'm competitive. I do work with a coach. I have a very structured training plan. I ride on average about 6 days a week, and those 6 days are broken up into certain types of workouts, you know, interval workouts versus just endurance or recovery rides. I also do a lot of strength training,
mm-hmm.
Probably about 5 hours of core and strength training every week in addition to the cycling I do.
You mentioned, you know, training, strength training.
Yeah.
What about the mental aspect? Ironman, I imagine there's a lot of, you know, can I do this? Can I get through this? Can I make it to the end and not DNF, do not finish?
Yeah.
With gravel racing, gravel cycling, you explained at the beginning, you see a lot of places you don't get a chance to see otherwise, mm-hmm. and you see a lot of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more is there more of a freeing aspect mentally when you do this?
When I race, no. Yeah. I would say there's no.
You're locked
honestly,
in.
When I am in a race, you know, I couldn't tell you what I saw alongside the road. I am so fixated on what I'm doing. My mental focus is all about, you know, where are my power numbers? You know, where is my heart rate? Am I taking on enough hydration? You know, am I taking in enough carbohydrates? Am I taking in enough sodium? You know, I'm keeping track of all of these things. And as far as, you know, mental toughness, yeah, you know, sometimes it's awful. You know, sometimes it hurts really bad, especially at the beginning of the race. These races go out hard and aggressive and people are shoulder to shoulder and you're just hanging on for dear life, knowing that at some point things are going to settle down. Hopefully. But yeah, you can go to some dark places and it can be a little bit daunting. So you really have to shake yourself up and to, you know, focus on the positive and understand that everybody around you is encountering those same feelings. Everybody hurts.
Yeah.
You just have to push through it and get through. So yeah, it's looking at the wheel in front of you and just, you know, riding hard and having that intense focus. And then afterwards you get to see maybe some photographs that were taken and you go, oh wow, that was really pretty. I didn't, you know, wow, I rode by a beautiful barn and, you know, some colorful trees and didn't even realize I was there.
Dr. Courtney Mayette, Chairwoman and Associate Professor of Chemistry and Competitive Gravel Racer. Dr. Mayette, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Paul Ray from Hillsdale's History Department, Andrew Biggio, the author of The Rifle 2, and Courtney Mayette from Hillsdale's Chemistry Department. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including more stories from Andrew Biggio this week, or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
At Premier Oil Change, you can be assured that our highly trained staff will take great care of you and your vehicle. From your air pressure to your windshield wipers and everything in between, we make it easy for you with our quick, convenient drive-through service. No appointment necessary, you just drive right in. We also perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. You get to enjoy a free beverage with free Wi-Fi and earn points towards free products and services with Premier Rewards. Use Premier Services to maintain your new car warranty. Now that is a win-win. Drive in today. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palisadro, located in the Holiday Market Shopping Center, or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park, or in Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. All three locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Everybody has been dealing with the availability of homeowners insurance in Northern California. Companies not writing your home insurance anymore are leaving the state altogether. Siskiyou Insurance has hired a specialist specifically for dealing with a homeowners crisis here in Shasta County. He specializes in what the market is doing, coverages, and which companies may be able to help. Call Brian Dews at Siskiyou Insurance Services for your home or auto consultation. Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.